Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brian Mickelson, and I am counsel on behalf of the appellant. May I please reserve 3 minutes?
Sure. Just keep
Could you put the microphone up a little bit? Thank you very much.
Does that work okay?
That's better.
That's better.
Perfect.
Just keep an eye on the clock. You can reserve the time you requested. Sure.
Okay. We're here today, Your Honors, because a district court grossly ignored the standard for a motion for summary judgment, construed all evidence and inferences in favor of the moving party, and invaded the province of a jury by resolving genuine issues of material fact that go directly to motive, intent, pretext, and causation. Now, as this court knows, this is a Title VII case that involves three different types of claims, which I intend to address each in my time.
What's your strongest argument?
The strongest argument is our retaliation claim. And that's the one that I intend to start first with. You'll note that in the 34-page order by the trial court, but 3 pages were devoted to this claim. And the reason why is because it's bare.
Well, let me just lay out my concern, and maybe that would help you answer it. Let's assume that your client can get past the prima facie stage because of this temporal situation. But even with that, it seems to me you got a tough road to hoe on pretext. When she's drinking on the job, she's having sex with Cowan, and she accepted higher pay for months, which would have been improper. So why doesn't that support the district court's determination?
Sure. First, as to the pretext argument, there is ample evidence that there was discriminatory motive and pretext behind what was going on. Here you have a supervisor, a male supervisor, who is sending text messages of sexually explicit material to his subordinate female employee.
Well, counsel, but doesn't the record show that those were reciprocated?
They were, in fact, reciprocated, but dangling below Ms. Kolsak in this scenario was her livelihood. She's a single mother. She's trying to make ends meet for her child, and yet you have a boss that's saying, if you want to advance, if you want to have your job, if you want to be able to, for me to be able to protect you from the other harassment that's going on in this negative culture, then you need to do what I want you to do. And
did that involve drinking on the premises?
She was, yes, she drank on the premises. She did not drink during work hours. That did involve that, and that involved other employees who engaged in the same type of activity, including other females.
Your briefing goes out of the way to talk about drinking on premises, but after work hours, versus the sexual misconduct that happened on premises during work hours. I'm not sure whether or why that was a meaningful distinction that you wanted to call our attention to, or am I reading too much into that?
No, I think the distinction is that other employees who are engaging in this type of conduct did not, you know, sign off the clock while they were participating in these activities, and in fact did them during work hours, and she didn't. I think the importance of that is she understood, she wanted to comply with the USPS policies, but she felt pressured and coerced to engage in this type of behavior until finally she left the premises to the Snohomish facility and was able to confide in someone that she could trust and reported all these activities.
Was she always a subordinate?
She was a subordinate. She was not a subordinate prior to Cohen's arrival. I believe it was for a series of a few months that she served as the person in charge for that facility because they're waiting for a postmaster.
It's a small post office, right?
Yes. Yes. And so she did not engage. There's zero evidence of her engaging in drinking on the job or engaging in sexual activity of any kind or sending explicitly sexual text messages without Cohen being there, both for her or for anyone else, to my knowledge. It's only until Cohen arrives that he creates this culture of, hey, if you want to move forward, you need to do these things.
And what about the allegation with respect to the higher pay situation?
She was essentially doing Cohen's job for him, and then she was terminated for doing a job that she did not have but was asked to do by her boss and give him pay for it. He's the one who drove the unauthorized vehicle. He was the one who...
Well, did she accept higher pay that turned out to be improper?
She accepted higher pay because she was doing jobs that allowed her to receive that higher
pay. Her answer to Judge McKeon's question
is yes.
Yes. Yes.
And that was deemed by the employer to be improper?
Yes.
Okay.
If you look,
I think you're not contesting that it was improper. Your argument today seems to pivot solely on your contention that she did this under duress.
Yes. If you look at the host of circumstantial evidence of pretext, I want to direct you to the argument of the temporal proximity between Kolsak's reporting and termination. When looking at a retaliation claim, the first two elements of that claim are not in dispute. The only element that's in dispute is the causation element. And the question that I would pose for all of us is, how could there not be causation when she reported something that others chose not to report, and as a result of reporting it, 89 days later, she was terminated from her job. The other evidence of discriminatory or pretext is the condescending and combative nature of Senecal, one of the men who interviewed her in a one-sided investigation. Senecal was sexist and frankly made slut-shaming comments about her, having a hard time believing that Kolsak didn't enjoy her relationship with Cohen. He entered the room, handed her an OIG report, and asked her to identify inaccuracies, which Kolsak understood to mean, you know, are these inaccuracies with spelling inaccuracies or data inaccuracies? And then he cherry-picked statements or text messages sent by Kolsak to establish a 1980s version of what it means to be consent, while at the same time never reviewing any of the text messages or evidence suggesting that Kolsak attempted to end the relationship four different times and was met with resistance and threats hanging over her head each time. You have Cohen, who would regularly threaten to remove Mel from her family, who would spread rumors during this time to the different employees there as well. Senecal, during that same investigation, compared Ms. Kolsak to a bank robber, as though somehow she was the criminal here, as opposed to the victim for suffering a duress-like relationship with her boss. Senecal failed to investigate and interview others. If you actually look at AL is her initials that's used in the record, she was another employee at that facility who sent sexually explicit text messages, who engaged in sexual activity with Cohen, and who drank on the job while on the clock. And my understanding is that she's currently employed by USPS and working as the OIG at the East Sound facility.
She denied the conduct, and is my understanding. And one thing that struck me about this investigation is that neither of the parties involved in this relationship denied the conduct. So Kolsak's superior said words to the effect of, when confronted with her allegation, said that what she said was correct.
Yes, Cohen confirmed what Kolsak said and told the investigators to believe her.
He was separated as well.
And he was separated as well.
They also, as you say, they pursued him for that same workplace conduct. Cohen, right?
Excuse me?
The Postal Service pursued Cohen, or Cowan, whichever, for the same workplace conduct with respect to the sexual relation, right?
The investigation ended.
Well, he separated.
Well, he separated.
He yes. left, and there's and he took quite a hit on his pension, and there's notation in the file that he's not to be rehired.
Right, but he was also still able to leave USPS with some form of retirement benefit.
Right, and I think I'll just my hang up on that, so both of you can have an opportunity to respond, is my understanding is that's because he went to the union immediately. He had vested, that's my colloquial term, and had been there longer and had the ability to do that, to leave. And that's something that was negotiated and facilitated by the Office of Personnel Management, not the post office. What the post office, I think, was presented with, or my understanding is, was presented with the fait accompli. He had left. He had retired immediately. And the post office responded by, I think, doing what they could do, which is put an entry in the file indicating that if he wasn't to be rehired, if he ever came back, the investigation they had launched would continue. So I know I've paraphrased, but am I wrong in my understanding?
My understanding is that Senecal was aware that the OIG, who met with a union representative and made this determination, Senecal was involved in that process in order to get him out of there. But yet he still received the retirement benefits. He avoided the type of interview that that Ms. Kohlstock had to undergo.
Right, but didn't he avoid it? Forgive me, Judge McKeon. Didn't he avoid it by terminating his employment
with retirement benefits?
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, it's basically I'm out of here. Give me my retirement benefits that I've owed, but I'm done. So there would be no further reason to investigate him, would there?
Well, there would be only further reason to investigate Cohen to the extent that there would have been an investigation as to the other employees who engaged in similar conduct.
Well, Cohen, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, he admitted the conduct.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what there was to investigate. He admitted this conduct, and it's pretty extraordinary conduct.
It is extraordinary. Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
All right. Did you want to save some time?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. James Strong representing the Postmaster General. As this court has already noted, Laurel Kohlstock admitted that she took pay at times at a rate that she was not entitled to receive. She drank alcohol at work and that she engaged in sexual acts while on the clock. This is all included in the Inspector General report at ER 355 and 356. One thing I did want to make clear in reviewing the briefing again today is the date as to when these interactions with Mr. Senecal occurred. In the opening brief, it's mentioned that it might have been June 7th. That date is not supported by the record. In fact, it's July 9th. That's the date that she includes in her EEO complaint.
Sorry, and that's the date. I couldn't hear you. That's the date.
She includes in her EEO report is July 9th.
For what?
Her first conversation with Mr. Senecal, one that she claims is combative and condescending.
Yes, not disputed. Yeah, I understand. Okay.
Yeah, so there was just a discrepancy between the two dates in the briefing, and I want to make sure that clear that the record supports it's July 9th.
Got it.
So by that time, the OIG's investigation had been completed and had been transmitted to Mr. Senecal. You had asked about the retirement benefits.
Let me just go back to that. We haven't really focused on it, but in terms of the hostile work environment and the claim to the EEOC, you have 45 days.
Correct.
In order to report. And I think that you claim in your brief that the last contact with Cohen is June 7th. So she's, 5 days off?
Correct.
Okay. And is there any allegation that she makes with respect to the fact that there were other events that were interrelated that may serve as the kickoff point rather than June 7th?
What she is claiming is that then the interactions with Mr.
Senecal
in July and August are those those events that would have to create one unlawful practice. And what the district court recognized and what we've argued here on appeal is that under this court's decision in Porter versus California Department of Corrections, what we look at is, are these two events, do they involve the same manager? Do they involve the same type of conduct and so forth? And just based on this record, there's just no dispute that we're talking about two very disparate events. We're talking about a sexually charged relationship up at the post office versus disciplinary process that's happening afterwards.
I think I heard your friend on the other side just say that there was no drinking on or on the job or on the premises and no sexual activity before Cohen or Cowan, I'm sorry, I'm not pronouncing that correctly, before he arrived. Is that correct?
There was no evidence that she engaged in any sex acts before Mr. Cohen arrived.
He was the other half. So.
He was the other half. I mean, that was the relationship.
How about the drinking?
There is no evidence in the record that there was drinking on the job before or after. We just don't know.
But that's one of the claims as to why.
Correct.
Pretext is, you know, not present. Correct.
That's not how I understand their argument, Your Honor.
No, I'm talking about your client's argument.
Well, our argument is that the OIG's report evidences that over the seven-month period from February 2020 till she leaves for Snohomish in December 2020, that she acknowledges that she was drinking on the job or drinking on work premises with Mr. Cohen, and that she was engaging in those sex acts with Mr. Cohen, along with the improper pay, and each of those serve as a.
I mean, you don't need three, but it seems like you're saying now she was not drinking on the job. Is that right? She might have been drinking on the premises, but not during her work hours.
Your Honor, what? And I would go back to ER-202 because that's where I think that point is being made. That's the letter of removal, and it's what that says is just that you've acknowledged that you were drinking on work premises, which does violate postal policy. Now, the district court
but
does.
But a post office up there.
I'll leave it to
you don't have to comment.
Can I go back to the Snohomish comment? Because did leave.
Do you mind if I actually finish?
Oh, you weren't finished.
I have
go
a
ahead.
Point to Judge McEwen's point that the district court did cite in the record, and I don't have the excerpt record, but the docket number below is 5519, that there was evidence that she was at least one time had served alcohol with Mr. Cohen during a conference call where they also engaged in a sex act while he was on that conference call.
But during work hours? Is that the implication?
During work hours.
A conference call, it would be during work.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyway, my apologies.
No, I think I thought you were done with answering the question. My apologies. Anyway, now that we're all apologetic. About Snohomish,
yes.
She did leave for some period of time and went to Snohomish,
correct.
But then inquired about coming back and, you know, where he was still working. Mm-hmm. And I think declined to come back. And I just want to clarify, she declined to come back after he confirmed that if she came back, she would come back at the correct rate of pay, not the higher rate of pay. Is that right?
That's what the text between them says, is that Cohen reports that she'll come back to her bid job. Now, what's going to happen after that? It's a matter of
speculation. She didn't go back.
She did not.
Okay.
So what happens at that point is that just a little bit later, she notices the charge on her credit card. That's when she mm-hmm. goes to Postmaster Chang.
Right. Opposing counsel pointed out that she alleged, I think this is correct, she alleged that Cohen, I'll choose Cohen. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. I hope it is. Was also carrying on very inappropriately with another employee at the post office. My understanding is that employee was investigated and denied that kind of a relationship. If you can correct me if I'm wrong, but did Cohen also deny that other relationship?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's in both of those interviews were done by the Inspector General and are attached to that report. And I would also dispute, I actually don't think it matters because at the end of the day, it matters what Mr. Senecal and Mr. Singh Minha should have known. And, you know, we have what the record is that they denied it to the OIG. But even in discovery, there was no.
It might support a claim. I'd be much more curious if I thought that there wasn't follow up as to a similar allegation with a different employee, but there was with your client or this litigant. It sounds like that's just not the case. I think
right.
The answer is that my understanding of the record is correct, and I can
right.
leave it at that.
Yes, the Inspector General did ask about a relationship between those two. It's included in both of their memoranda.
And the point is they denied it.
That's correct.
Okay, that's what I needed to verify. Thank you. Dr. Hawkins, do you have additional questions?
You don't.
Judge McEwen, do you have additional questions? I don't think we have additional questions, counsel.
Okay. I think we went over the hostile work environment, so I will end there and ask the court to affirm the district court's judgment.
Thank you for your
Thank
argument.
You. Thank you, counsel.
I wanted to take some time and address the hostile work environment claim, if I may. There's a question as to the timeliness of when that was made. I would want to direct the court, I believe, it's to the McGinnis opinion, Ninth Circuit opinion, where it says that the court should have weighed the course relationship, threats, promises, and disparate discipline altogether. A hostile work environment must be assessed in the totality of circumstances as opposed by an incident-by-incident basis. And what Ms. Kohlstock has demonstrated in the record is that there was a continuous string of discriminatory pretext against her, which would include the combative tone, which would include the demeaning nature of the interview, which would include the accusation that she enjoyed it, which would include the failure to come at this investigation wanting to understand the other side of the story as opposed to just rushing into these prejudgments that Senegal and Singh have made on their own. I think that your question, not to be too scattered, but going back to, you know, whether this woman who was allegedly engaging in the same type of conduct and then she denied it in the interview, I think that's the point that's replete throughout this record. That's a question of credibility. That's a question for a jury to determine.
Well, if we're looking for a legitimate non-discriminatory reason and we're assessing pretext, my point was just that Cowan did not deny the conduct with your client, but did, I think both parties to the other alleged relationship did deny the conduct. And that's what I was trying to verify.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor.
Sure.
As to the reasonable care defense, you cannot expect Ms. Kohlstock, a female subordinate, to exhaust an anti-harassment policy where the very investigation that she was subjected to is arguably predetermined, discriminatory, and incomplete. That is the essence of a hostile work environment. That continued on from the time that Cowan took over and perpetuated this culture until the time that that she was terminated. As to the use of the card and how she was paid, Cowan demanded that she do his job for him. That was the expectation. And if she's going to be doing a job for Cowan as his direct supervisor, she assumed that she'd be compensated for the work.
But she can't unilaterally basically change her pay status just because in her mind she's doing his job.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think she can.
What's the basis for doing that?
I don't think that she unilaterally made that decision. I think Cowan unilaterally made that decision for her. She didn't have access.
The documents reflect.
She didn't have the ability to change the pay rate. That was dictated by Cowan, her supervisor, who had the ability to do that. And so, yes, she accepted the monies when she received them. But that was driven by her direct supervisor.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
You're over time, and I think we're out of questions.
Okay, thank you.
But we appreciate your arguments, both of you, and we'll take that case under advisement and go on to the next case on the calendar.